This is a Wild Games Production podcast.
You remember.
Roll your stealth roll?
Game books, pencils, pizza, cheese puffs, and a hell of a lot of dice.
And the dragon woke up.
Roll for initiative.
This is the Roll for Initiative podcast, where 1E is the place to be.
This is the Roll for Initiative podcast. We are back for Volume 8. I am Vince, sitting with Nick.
The band's back together, man.
And Matt.
Hello, everyone.
We are back. Brand new show. We're doing Volume 8 now, and we're going to go along with this train. We got a little bit of a change in format this season. And this is going to take us through pretty much the end of the year, as we were talking. I mean, barring incident or whatever, we have enough shows here to talk about until the end of the year. Believe that, guys?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Crazy. Nuts.
There you go. So you won't hear any segments and bumpers or anything like that. We're just going to jump right into things, and we're going to start reviewing and talking about the D&D cartoon. A lot of people have requested this over the years, of us going over the episodes and talking about them and giving our thoughts and what decisions we would make during the cartoon if it was an actual game. You've seen that YouTube video when they did that, right? Have you guys seen that?
Actually, I haven't.
I have.
It was a YouTube video where I guess someone took the cartoon and they actually put it as if the cartoon was talking to a real dungeon master, and he'd pause it and you'd actually hear dice rolling. Nope, you can't do that. Whoop, you missed. Things like that. I got to find that link. It's really hysterical.
Okay.
But anyway, we're going to talk about the first episode, The Night of No Tomorrow, which premiered on September 17th, 1983. Wow.
Oh, gosh. What a wonderful time. I was 12 years old.
Aw. Oh, poor little
yeah,
Nick.
I was 12.
I wasn't even... I was like 8. So
I was 3.
Aww.
I am an old man. Oh, dear Lord.
And this is written by Mark Evaner. Am I probably pronouncing that? Evaner? Yeah. But he wrote a majority of the cartoon episodes.
Yes.
If you look, one way or another, he's involved in writing the episode. He may not be the lead writer on them all, but he was involved in writing just about every one of these episodes, in the first season at least.
Now, I think they started like pre-production on the whole series, late 1982?
Yeah, they did.
And doing the whole, doing all the animation took them up until about at least 9 months later. There's a lot of episodes for the first season, 13.
Yeah, and then if you look at the very beginning credits, you'll notice it's also co-produced with Marvel.
Yeah. Marvel Entertainment at the time. Marvel Productions, I should say.
Yeah.
Which was the, they were doing stuff like
Spider-Man,
Transformers, G.I. Joe, My Little Pony.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to bring that one. Anyway.
Yes, I did.
So this episode kind of starts in the middle of what the hell is going on, because you get the standard intro that we all loved, them going to the amusement park, going in that, what was the ride called? I can't think of the name offhand.
Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, I think it was just called Dungeons and Dragons. And they fell through this portal and they came to this land, and you see the dungeon master shows up and just gives them these random weapons. Hank is the ranger, given a bow that creates arrows of energy. And presto, the magician. Why did they name him a magician? Why didn't they name him mage or magic user? Anybody know?
I don't know.
I just thought that was kind of weird.
Because maybe magician is more identifiable as a word to most people.
Was this kind of during the panic era and they were afraid?
Oh, it was dead in the middle of it, 1983.
Yeah, exactly.
Did they think maybe magic user or mage would have been too much of a whole, that's demonic? So
no, I don't think so. I think it was more about identification. People hear magician like, I get that.
Right. And really, if you look at the type of magic he was doing, it was all, what am I pulling out of my hat?
My hat, yeah.
So he was a magician.
He's pulling
things out of a hat.
And more often than not, it was more like, what am I pulling out of my arse? You know?
Right.
Yeah, pretty much.
He was very much out of the Bullwinkle magician school.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, boy. What's the difference, Rocky?
Oh, that trick never works.
Oh, I'll try again. Anyway, he's given what is up with Moose and Squirtle? He's given a hat of magic spells. Yay. Eric the Cavalier, the utter chicken of the entire series, voiced by...
Eric was Donnie Most.
There we go. Or later known
Ralph
as...
Ralph the Mouth.
Or known as Don. Yes.
Right. Didn't it's Ralph
be,
the Mouth.
Didn't want to be called Donnie anymore. Anyway, he's given a shield that can deflect against any attack. Yay.
Yay.
And Diana, the acrobat, is given an extendable javelin that allows her to do feats of acrobatics.
Yep.
That she can also throw and bounce off of things too, as you've seen in the episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which so is in other cool. words, yeah, part daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
Actually.
And Sheila, the thief, is given a cloak that, when pulled over her head, makes her invisible. And finally, we have what?
No, it's a cloak of invisibility.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Is yeah. And Bobby, the barbarian, is given a club that can crush anything it is struck against. So
you mean Bam Bam?
Bam Bam. Bam Bam. Bam.
He's Bam Bam.
He causes earthquakes.
So we got the party consists of a ranger, a magic user, a cavalier,
yep.
an acrobat, a thief, and a barbarian. Where's our cleric?
Exactly.
We don't want to go into that for a Saturday morning cartoon about religion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Matt's now the censorship. We don't want to go through
that.
That
would have been controversial.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, just considering some of the controversy late in later episodes in regards to some of the violence.
Right.
So the episode after you go through the whole little intro that we love is basically just starts in the middle of the group climbing the mountain. They're attempting to find their way home. They're kind of complaining about it. Mm-hmm. Side note, how the hell is this unicorn that climbing the mountain?
The unicorn voiced by Willie Aim from Charles in Charge.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
No, Uni was voiced by Frank Welker.
Yeah.
I thought, who was Willie Aim from Charles in Charge?
He was Hank.
He's Hank. That's correct.
Okay, that's right, because the big bad in this is voiced by Optimus Prime, Peter Cullen.
I'm Optimus Prime.
I'm Vinger.
Actually, I'm Peter Cullen.
Yes.
Yes.
But anyway, they're climbing this mountain, and Uni is somehow climbing the mountain with them. How the hell does a unicorn climb a mountain?
Because it's part mountain goat?
And... my other question is, they're not weirded out by they now have a unicorn with them?
Well, you don't even know.
They seem really well adapted to the fact that, hey, we just got sucked through in a coaster and this weird little bald guy that looks like the guy from Princess Bride gave us a bunch of weapons.
Yeah.
And they just, yeah, it's just like.
I don't think the first episode was meant to be like that. It was like they've already... apparently spent some time here.
It's kind of like you got thrown in the middle of session 3.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much. When I first watched this, I started watching it. I'm like, oh, I must be watching the wrong episode. Let me go check.
No, you're watching the right episode.
Yeah, let me go to the internet to double check, because this cannot be right. Oh my God, it is.
Yeah, you're watching the right episode. Don't worry.
I guess what's that called in media res?
I guess so.
Yeah. But they give no backstory at all outside of the intro theme.
The intro, no.
But it's an 80s cartoon, so that's all they need to do is explain that, and kids are dumb, so.
You know what? My 12-year-old brain did not care.
It did not care, no.
It was D&D on television. I was sucking down freaking Fruit Loops in front of the television. I was a happy boy.
I think this was one of the early morning Saturday cartoons, like 8 a.m. Eastern time zone.
Actually, it came where I was in Central time zone, where I grew up in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
It came on kind of later in the morning.
Did it for you?
I think it was like 9, 10 o'clock.
Oh, technically, if you do Google it, and I know Matt's good at a Google Foo, you can actually look at the TV schedule for whatever channel it was at the time frame during that era.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, they climb the mountain, and they finally get to the top of the mountain. As the rest of them are climbing, they start echoing their voices off the mountain like a bunch of dummies, because that's what everybody does when you get to the top.
Let's attract monsters! Let's attract monsters!
And then Eric starts complaining about Bobby, how he's just annoying, and, you know, his kid brother, Sheila's kid brother, is really annoying, because apparently Sheila and Bobby are related.
Yes. They're brother and sister.
And then,
Dungeons and Dragons had the 9:30 time slot.
That's what it was. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I knew it was late in the morning.
It was after the Saturday Supercade, but before Dukes of Hazzard.
Oh, the Dukes of Hazzard cartoon, right?
Hazzard.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a Dukes of Hazzard cartoon for a blink.
Yep. Yep.
I don't even remember that.
I remember the Dukes of Hazzard cartoon. I loved it. Anyway, so they get to the top, and finally Uni goes up to the edge of the mountain and decides to do an echo, but nothing happens. What the frick? Why doesn't she have an echo? No idea.
Because something was blocking the echo.
What? A giant Tiamat hiding in the cave?
You mean wandering monster Tiamat? Very first edition there.
That's can I say, that's a dick move by a DM. Wandering monster.
Isn't that like throwing the what was it, the Demigorgon at them from Stranger Things type deal?
No.
Pretty much. Probably the same DM.
Probably.
It probably is. It's like, okay, I'm gonna roll for wandering monsters, guys.
Oh, demon Tiamat.
Oh, Tiamat, awesome.
Because that's like, how you do it. What? On a roll of 666, we get Tiamat. I rolled 666. Anyway, so Bobby grabs his club, running after Tiamat because, you know, that's what he does as a barbarian. He just rushes into battle because that's what barbarians do.
That's his M.O.
Bam, bam.
Not
Hulk smash.
Wouldn't you think Bobby the Cavalier smash would be the one running directly into the battle?
No, because this character is somewhat of a coward.
Oh, this character is Brave Sir Robin.
Well, no, we see him in episode 2. Is. We see Brave Sir Robin in episode 2, so.
he does later on, you do see him a bit of a... When push comes to shove, he will help out the rest of the group.
Right.
But.
Yeah, you have to be pushed into it.
He's a sniveling rich kid.
Yeah, pretty much. Which we find out a lot how filthy rich his family is as the series goes on. But anyway.
Yeah.
So Hank saves Bobby while Sheila distracts Tiamat at the cave because he starts shooting his little magical, what is it, energy bolts at Tiamat, distracting her. Yeah. And then Bobby runs back. Oh, no, he shoots Bobby's club, which knocks him out of the way so Tiamat can't get him.
Yes.
And then Sheila goes to the cave and says, "Hey, Tiamat, I'm over here." And then puts her cloak on as Tiamat runs after her, and Bobby swats the rock down that blocks the great Tiamat inside the cave with a rock.
Yeah.
Apparently, Tiamat woke up from a nap, was totally groggy, did not know what the hell it was doing. I'd be pissed off if there was a bunch of people outside my house making noise.
Well, really, if you follow the episodes of this cartoon, you'll discover that Tiamat is... His weakness is the same weakness of Wile E. Coyote.
It's a she. It's a she. Tiamat's a female.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Tiamat's is vulnerable to the same things Wile E. Coyote is.
Just stupidity. Oh,
falling off cliffs?
Falling off cliffs, getting falling in holes and getting trapped. Very much Wile E. Coyote weakness.
So she's trapped in that cave. Oh, whoo! Adventure over, encounter over. Here's your experience points. What do you think you get for that? Like, 2? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Nothing.
They invaded the encounter. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah. And then they're just like, oh, woo! And then Dungeon Master, this little short guy named Dungeon Master, shows up and he's like, "Hey, I have an adventure for you."
Hey, what's up, yo?
And he's like, "Hey, if you go here and do this and find this, you might be able to get home. But beware the guy with the white hair." He'll be your greatest enemy. I'm just like, ugh. And then he does his little, "I'm going to walk around the rock and disappear."
And Eric's like, "Oh, he did it again."
Yeah. And then Eric complains again. Yeah. As you, I think Uni followed him around the rock and went, and, you know, there you go. So the group decides to head north because that's where the Dungeon Master told them to go. And that's what any good group does when they get NPC information. Always follow it. So they're tired and hungry and complaining the whole time. So Presto's like, hey, I'll fix the situation. What is he?
Hamburgers.
Yeah. So he does some like really stupid magical rhyme and he pulls out a cow from his hat. Yeah. And then
notice all of Presto's magic is basically like a wish spell in how they get the outcome. He gets exactly what he asks for every time.
Well, that's true. And then they stumble on a sign that says Merlin's Castle this way. And they're like, oh, okay. So they keep walking, and they find a sign that points to the opposite direction, Merlin's Castle this way. And they're like, well, it says it was right here.
And I think CeeLo's like, oh, look up.
Well, they all fail their, like, investigative, like, spot checks or whatever. And they're just like, oh. As Sheila's like,
have no peripheral vision.
Yeah, you big dummy, it's right above us. And then like a ladder appears out of nowhere. I don't know how they even triggered. Was it just like a pressure point or?
Because it's a trap.
Oh, it's a trap. Got it.
It's a trap.
It's a trap. Yes,
it is once they get up there.
So the group climbs up and then Uni attempts to follow but can't and falls back down. And I say thank goodness because I can't stand Uni. Sorry to people who love Uni. I don't like Uni.
Yeah, I can tolerate it.
And they're just like, oh, we'll be back for you. Right.
Loser.
Yeah, so then they're up on this cloud area. They see this giant castle with a sky moat. And there is a drawbridge, and they can't get across it. So how do they get across that moat, Nick?
If I remember correctly, Sheila pole vaults across the moat.
Mm-hmm.
And then she lets the drawbridge down, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, you do. That's correct.
Okay.
She passes her rolls for pole vaulting across that giant gap of drawbridge. Perfectly, may I add.
Mm-hmm.
Pulls the lever, and then the group goes across the new drawbridge that's in the way.
It's the quarterstaff. It gives her a bonus.
Oh, right. I didn't realize that. I didn't.
And she may have rolled a nat 20 for all you know.
Yeah.
So they walk in and they see this wonderful castle and they meet Merlin.
Yeah.
Who has white hair. And he's holding a white rabbit.
White hair. Oh, yes.
Well, they think it's a rabbit because they just don't realize a hare is also a rabbit. But anyway.
Right.
And then you hear... I think it's Sheila. It's like, hey, look, he has white hair. Didn't Dungeon Man, like, as loud as possible, she says this to Hank.
And, yes.
And he's just like, oh, as powerful as I am, I still haven't been able to learn to grow hair on my head. And he pulls off his hat and he's got like a fake white wig underneath it.
And he's bald.
I'm just like, what? Did he hear Dungeon Master talking about this? What?
Why Merlin?
I mean, I have no idea.
Merlin's not...
Well, I think the reason why they use Merlin is because one, a well-known magician through time in history and mythology, and what's his name? Presto. By the way, his real name is Presto?
You know what? We never learn his name.
Yeah. I'm just curious about that. His real name is Presto, now that I'm saying it out loud. But anyway, Presto...
Oh, wait a minute. His name is Albert.
Oh, we do find out his name is Albert?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they always refer to him as his... I don't know why they all of a sudden called him Presto.
Man.
Probably to make
Why didn't they call, like, Sheila Sneaker Kid? I mean, I don't know.
So, because Merlin is such a powerful magician, he wants to be a really powerful magician. That's his dream. So I think that was part of the whole temptation, as we find out later on. So maybe that's why they use Merlin.
Oh, right. That makes sense. Yeah.
So then Dungeon Master Merlin tells them a full story of Avenger and what he did and all the dragons and how blah, blah, blah. And he really can't help them get home. And then Eric is just like, you know what? Screw this stuff. I'm out of here. I almost said the other word, but anyway.
You got close.
Yeah, close.
I'm okay with that. I get it.
Yeah.
And he goes to open the door, and guess who comes through the door?
Tiamat.
How the frick did Tiamat get up there?
She can wandering fly.
Wandering monster roll.
Is that
hold on? Wandering monster roll again. Team Madigan, yay!
So, is the dungeon master like an utter dick to the fact he's like, you're not going to go along with my adventure? Here's Team Madigan.
Oh my god, yes. Oh my god, yes.
You will hop on the railroad. You will like the railroad.
So
you will love it because I'm dungeon master.
So basically, it's railroad or Tiamat. That's your.
No.
That would actually be an interesting con game. Railroad or Tiamat. That's your title.
Uh oh, I can already hear it. Dead Game Society is writing up a game now.
I could think of yes, that would be awesome. Either get on the woo-woo train or Tiamat attacks you.
And Bobby goes after Tiamat again, but Merlin pretty much distracts Tiamat with Hank, and the group runs away from Tiamat as Hank is distracting them because Hank, you know, takes the bullet yet again for his group, doing the job of the Cavalier, but he's a ranger.
Because Hank's the only useful guy there.
Apparently he's the only one that knows. But he kind of reminds me of, like, the older brother in Goonies for some reason.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why. Just he reminds me of the older brother in Goonies, how he was, like, leading the group and trying to keep them together.
He's Fred from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, that's even better. Fred from Scooby-Doo.
With a magical bow.
It is just like the Dungeon Master is actually Wallace Shawn from Princess Bride or...
Yes.
They're the same thing. Look at them.
Yeah, true.
Oh, God.
So while Hank is distracting them, they run into another room to find a giant dungeon hole. I don't know how to really describe it. It's just like a hole in the ground with a door over it.
Yeah.
And they're just like, help me open this up. So they all open it up, and then they ask Presto to pull a carpet out so they can throw it over the hole. And here comes Matt's theory of Wile E. Coyote here.
Yep.
But
he comes a charging and he falls in the hole because he cannot see holes in front of him. It's his weakness.
Yeah, pretty much. He falls through the carpet and they just close the door on him, and the door keeps her trapped down there again.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the kids because... to like, paint a hole on the side of a wall and him to run straight into it and Tiamat knock herself out.
Because Tiamat is an idiot in this show.
But
yes.
May I add, Presto actually did something correctly for once.
He actually made the carpet, yes.
We need to keep tally of that, because I don't think it ever happens more than a couple times throughout the entire cartoon.
That's once. Once he actually pulled out something useful that saved the party.
Exactly. And then after they finally do that, they're like, woo, thank goodness, we thwarted Tiamat. Now we can all go relax.
That was close.
As they go into the next, like, back to the cauldron room, I guess, and he tells them more about how he really can't help them, but... He tempts Presto to become his apprentice to help him research some spells to help them get home. So the group is like...
I just love it. I just love it how none of them questioned, like, excuse me, Merlin, how did you get here?
Yeah, well...
Plot hole.
Yeah. They don't really... They're just like, oh, are you sure? Oh, you can't help us? All right, bye. And they okay. all leave. They just all, like, take off and leave. And they go back to the town where they were supposed to go. I think it was called Helix, I believe, at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah, Helix.
They start heading towards Helix. And then, meanwhile, during that walk back, they show Merlin and Presto, and they're just like, Merlin's like, here, Presto, keep stirring this pot while I go in the other room, but I'm going to leave my giant, magical, powerful book right here. Don't touch it, though.
Don't read anything out of it now.
It's like, what? So Presto's just like, there has to be a spell in here. There has to be. So he goes and he flips through the book. And like 2 seconds.
Getting them home. Yes.
Like 2 seconds within looking through the book, he finds a spell.
It's like, there it is.
I'm just like, wait, huh? Did he like roll a 20 on his like search through spell books there?
Oh, no. Wait a minute. We're doing the roll here. One. Of course he made it.
Yeah, of course he made it because it's a trap.
T-Mac comes out of the book. Oh, sorry, that's not this point yet. Sorry.
That would have been awesome, T-Mac came out of the book.
No, yeah, but... So Merlin disappears to go figure out a way what to do with Tiamat while Presto is stirring the pot and... stirring the pot. That sounds so funny. He's causing trouble, pretty much, because he finds the spell and decides, hey, I can do this spell because I'm a super awesome magician and everything I do is never screwed up.
Uh-huh. So he starts grabbing the ingredients for the spell.
Throwing it into the already mixed cauldron of whatever Merlin was doing.
Right.
How do you even know what Merlin put in there to not screw up the spell? Nah, we'll just assume we have what's in there.
Been making soup for all we know.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
so you
it's
just...
a really simple spell. And all you have to do is open to the book and stir.
So then all of a sudden, the spell starts to work, and like the thing pops up, but nope. All the dragons come out of this. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. The dragons either come out of the portal that he opens up or comes out of the cauldron. I'm not quite sure.
And I don't think they were really dragons. If you look down, they looked like they were wyverns.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, but I wanted to go with what they said. So.
Yeah.
And then Merlin's like, oh no, I got to go find Merlin. I mean, Presto's like, oh no, I got to go find Merlin. I screwed up. And then he runs and finds Merlin, and he's just like, I screwed up. And then he's just like, oh, well. And he turns into Venger.
I know you did.
So basically we find out that it was actually Venger in disguise the whole time as he pulls off his mask. I just turns back into the Venger. He does
he transforms.
He does the Zartan thing from G.I. Joe.
Let's roll out. Oh, sorry, wrong show.
Yeah, wrong show. But he does the Zartan thing from G.I. Joe when he just puts his hand over his face and just pulls off the entire costume to look like himself when you not possibly can ever do that in real life.
Oh my god, it's Tomax and Zaymot.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's just like, you know, the Dungeon Master did warn you, dude. The guy with the hair, the white hair, is the one that's going to... Oh, that's right, a rabbit is a white hair. Duh. Meanwhile,
Because it's educational.
Right.
Right.
Back at the village, they were supposed to go to... Everyone is having a wonderful grand old time while dancing and singing and whatever. And Hank finds out by talking to the mayor of the village, who's standing on a friggin' barrel in the middle of the village. I was just trying to figure that out the whole time. Why was he on the barrel?
Because he's drunk.
Yeah, pretty much. They find out after talking to him, oh, we left our friend with Merlin. And they're like, wait, Merlin died years ago casting that spell to vanquish all the dragons away. And then all of a sudden, literally, as he says, vanquished all the dragons away, the dragons show up and start attacking everybody.
That's funny.
It's just like they vanished all the dragons away. Wait, is that a dragon?
Yeah.
See, they were vanquished thousands of...
So then as the village is being attacked, the group's like, meh, let's go back to Merlin's castle. Maybe we can find Presto and figure out what's going on. He needs to cast a spell again. It's just like, don't worry about the people.
Abandon the village.
Let it burn.
So
I see the whole world burn.
Yes. So they climb back up, and they find a big hole in the side of the castle because that's where all the, quote, dragons, unquote, came out from.
Wyverns. But anyway.
Shh, we don't talk about those things. And they're talking to Merlin. He's like, oh my god, he got tricked. He was actually Venger the whole time. And Venger just comes like out of a door. And he's just like, I want to have all your magical powers. He calls all their objects that they have.
Weapons of power.
Objects and weapons of power. So apparently these are like, what, wondrous items?
Yeah.
I'm guessing?
Ancient artifacts?
I mean,
or it's just a real, real, real low magic setting?
That's what I was trying to figure out. So if these are... If Venger is after these particular objects or weapons of power, they must be some significant value of something, maybe combining them or doing something with them? Or they're the most powerful weapons in the land?
Or Venger isn't as badass as we thought he was, and he set the bar really low for himself.
Right.
I mean, yes, this plus two dagger is a weapon of power.
Yeah, whatever. Really? So they distract him, and I think what they threw, Presto winds up throwing all the books on him by casting another successful like spell or something. Or
yeah, I think he knocked over a bookcase on him.
Well, yeah, that's not a spell, but to him that could be a spell.
Yeah.
So they basically run down to, what was it, the dungeon area of the castle, which I don't really get how they can do that in a floating castle, but whatever, it's a cartoon. They keep him busy while Presto and Hank start to try to fix things and correct the spell. This is where we find out that Tiamat shows up again, because they probably went off the adventure rails again.
Yes, they did.
The Dungeon Master rolled adventure.
Tiamat has to write everything.
Well, they had to free Tiamat as part of the distraction.
Well, that's right. Part of the distraction was to free Tiamat, which we found out Venger is completely, utterly scared of Tiamat.
The only person in the world afraid of Tiamat, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Is Venger.
Which she immediately beelines for Venger. Like, just like, wah, and goes right after him. He's like, oh, crap, and runs through this, like, what is it, like a door that he opened up in the wall or something?
Yeah.
Secret door he finds.
I gotta say, do we ever find out why Tiamat and Venger have this thing?
No.
I don't think we ever do in the series.
We'll find out as we go on and rewatch all these things. I mean, I haven't seen these in, 20 years, 30 years.
Like, you know, just like Tiamat's just, I don't know.
Maybe there's some sort of rift between the wandering monsters and the main character NPCs. Maybe she's
pissed off of being reduced to a wandering monster.
Right. Instead of getting that walk-on wandering monster role, Tiamat wanted to be the star.
I want to be the boss monster.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it's a weird union, non-union thing. Maybe there's not good benefits for the wandering monsters, and there's Venger getting all the good stuff.
So what's she going to do? Unionize all the wandering monsters? Why are you talking
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's Tolstoy.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
So Venger runs through the secret door, which he finds, and Tiamat follows him, I guess? Goes through her own secret door? Because we never see what happens to her exactly.
No.
She just kind of chases after him, and that's the last we see the two of them. Presto.
Hate spell.
Yeah. Presto casts the spell, and it works. All the dragons get sucked back into.
That's number two. That's two now. You keep in score? That's two in one episode.
Presto count.
Two. Nick, you're the official Presto count. So make sure you write that down.
Shoot.
That's really? Right. Yes, you're the official Presto count. Don't worry. I bet you won't get past five.
When we review the entire series?
Yes.
All right, hold on. Hold on. Let me write this down. Presto count.
Yeah, so just put down two dashes or whatever, or slashes, whatever you want to do to count.
Magic. Done. Right.
Two.
One, two.
So the group basically goes, whew, that worked, and decides to go back down. Where was Uni the whole time?
Cowering in a corner?
I don't know. So they go back down.
Uni's down on the ground, remember?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They probably tied Uni to like a rock or something. Left Uni there.
Screw you, Uni. They tied her to a rock. So they climb back down, and the ladder just basically just goes back up, and the castle goes, see ya, and just floats away.
Yeah.
Bye.
Poof.
And then...
Poof.
And then Presto's like, oh, no, I forgot my hat. And then Dungeon Master appears and like, oh, you mean this hat? Laying on a horse sideways. He's just like...
I'm like, really?
Yeah, the hat on the tip of his finger. And then they all get on a horse, but there's not enough horses at this point because now Presto's a part of the group. And then Eric is like, well, I don't share, and I don't ride a second saddle to anybody. I want my own horse. So he actually does something right again. So you get another slash, I guess, because he pulls out that stupid cow again. Do we count that
Is that really right?
I don't know. Matt, official ruling?
That's what he meant to do.
So,
he pulled the cows. I was actually expecting a donkey. But instead they went with the throwback cow.
So Presto count of magic done right is three.
Yep. And then the group rides off into the sunset, so to speak, back towards Helix, laughing, and Eric is stood there with the cow licking his face. And that's how the episode ends. So.
The end.
The end, yeah. And that's pretty much it. Dungeon Master just kind of went poof. See
as
you guys.
He always does. He went around a rock again.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he went around a rock.
And our cavalier's like, he did it again.
Yeah. I wonder how many. Nick, let's count how many times. No, I'm kidding. How many times Eric says he did it again, which is every episode, so never mind.
Right. It's the running gag.
Yeah, it's just a running gag. So, first episode, we all probably haven't seen it in many years. I probably haven't watched this in like 25 plus years since it originally aired, and maybe in the early 90s I might have watched the reruns that they had on. Was this on CBS?
Yeah, it was originally on CBS in 83.
Right, and then I think it might have been on USA at one point too.
Yes, USA Network. I recall it being on there.
So overall, I think this would be a pretty cool adventure to actually write out, but I think it might need a little more padding and fluff to it because it's too railroady.
Yeah. It as it is right now, I'm just thinking, man, it's getting close to being bad as Forest Oracle.
Like, I don't know if it's that bad, dude.
But it's not that bad. I'm like, it's borderline eh.
I think with a little tweaking and a little more backstory as to why the dragons were vanquished, or the wyverns, as you're saying, were vanquished, and what they actually did, and, you know, make a little more of, like, the adventure as far as the town of Helix, and which I don't get why the town of Helix was the only town that was attacked by these dragons.
Well, I the basic premise can be put into as a plot for adventuring.
Oh, yeah.
This town.
Yeah.
They are celebrating their annual celebration of the vanquishing of the dragons, or whatever the heck you want to call them. And all of a sudden they return, and your group has to find out why they've returned, and they have to go find this magical floating castle and all this and all the other stuff. I don't know if I'd have Venturing Tiamat in there, but
no.
I mean, the basic Tiamat? But I like the idea of, like, there is like a kind of making a twist on it, instead of it being like Merlin that vanquished him. Maybe it was an evil magic user that some other group hundreds of years ago had to vanquish.
Good idea.
Yeah.
And then he lived in this floating castle in the sky in a cloud, and now someone has to go back to the castle because that's where they think that the dragons or whatever flying creatures have been let loose.
Yeah, I mean, this whole story actually is almost like the plot to the Dragons of Khan-Tir, the Khans of Tarkir plot in Magic the Gathering for that whole little expansion block. It was like, oh, there's a land without dragons. It used to have dragons.
Now they got dragons gone.
Right, and now this guy, Sarkin, wants the dragons back. So he goes back in time and makes it so the dragons come back. And fast forward to the future, there's dragons. So, yeah. I mean, there is something there with the general plot. But, I mean, and also just thinking of it even with the kids and how they got sucked into D&D land. It was like, that's pretty much like every Ravenloft, the start of every Ravenloft campaign.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, look, you're going into something. Oh, no, you got sucked to a different land. Okay, so they got sucked into the Saturday morning equivalent of Ravenloft. And we skip the whole getting to know you section of the game in this story. It's almost like it's a con game, like a convention game. We're going straight to the action. Here's a little bit of backstory, but we're not really going to talk about it. And just go.
It's a tournament module.
Yeah, pretty much. Hence why there's Wandering Monster Tiamat.
Which keeps you on the rails. Yeah.
But like I said, I think the basic premise, if you could, that's definitely workable as an adventure. I think it'd be kind of cool. It would leave it open to like a lot of avian encounters when you're in the flying castle. Maybe stuff you haven't ever used before.
You know? Good idea.
Like, how often do we use Aarakocra? I mean, really.
All righty. So that's the first episode of the series. Tell us what you think, rfistaff@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Facebook at our RFI page on Facebook. Leave a comment on our webpage, rfipodcast.com. With that said, we're going to say keep it original, keep it old school, and good night, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Good night.
Roll for initiative.